Wow, well, good to be with you this morning. Welcome, welcome. If we haven't met before, which I think I've seen most every face here, so a lot of familiar faces. My name is Nick, and I'm on staff with the Salt Company in Ames, Iowa. So if you're not familiar with the Salt Company, basically it's just a college ministry at the campus of Iowa State University. So I get to hang out with college students all week, get to have a lot of gospel conversations with them, and then am involved with like some of the teaching there as well. So really, really thankful for that. If you're somebody that is like a prayer warrior, I would imagine there's a few of you in this church. You can be praying for a guy named Stephen and a guy named Austin. Both of those guys are people that have had a lot of really great conversations with over the last couple of weeks, and both of them are very, very close to placing their faith in Jesus. I'll just share one story just because it's kind of the best thing that I get to do each week. A guy named Stephen, recently connected with him. He's a freshman at Iowa State University, and met with him and just started explaining the gospel to him, okay? And I was like, have you ever heard anything like that before? And he's like, no, never. And I was like, wow, well, would you be interested in learning more? And he's like, absolutely. And so just, it's like this really fun situation where you meet somebody who's like never heard the gospel before, doesn't know who Jesus is far from God, but is very excited and leaning in to know more. And so if you're the kind of person who like prays a lot, that's just my like plead with you. I would love and appreciate your prayers for both Stephen and for Austin. They're great, great guys. But this morning, we're going to be in the book of Proverbs. We're going to bounce around. We're kind of taking a break from the series you've been doing here. We're going to be looking at principles from the book of Proverbs that will help us live a life of wisdom. And specifically today, we're going to be looking at Proverbs and what Proverbs has to say about friendship. And so as you're turning to the book of Proverbs, I just have kind of a question to get your mind going, but what is your favorite memory from the summer? What's your favorite memory from this summer? It's fall is like so clearly upon us, right? You go outside, it's getting kind of brisk. Yesterday it was, I think, 36 degrees in the morning and then 60 in the afternoon. That's kind of how this fall transition works, isn't it? It's like you go out in the morning and it's freezing, and by the afternoon you need to, you know, rip off sweatshirts. But fall is here, and it's a great time to just kind of stop and think, what are the best moments from this past summer? What were the things, looking back, you know, 3-4 months ago that were the best? And as I was thinking about the best or my favorite things about summer, there's one story that kind of just kept coming to my mind. I think I've shared this story before, but growing up, my brothers and I, one of the things we really like to do is we like to ramp our bikes. So it's not very smart, it's not very safe, but that's what we enjoyed doing. It's like nothing better than just, you know, throwing your body uncontrollably through the air and wishing for the best. And so that's what we did growing up. That's how we spent our time. That's what we did for fun. And so I remember one specific day, there's this hill in our backyard, and it's about 3 or 4 feet tall, and so we put like a ramp kind of on top of it. And then there was this driveway that sort of bumped up against the neighboring property. And so we would go to the top of the driveway, and we would just pedal as fast as we could towards this ramp, and we would just like, you know, we weren't praying for the best. We probably should have been praying for the best, but we just hit this ramp, and we would just ramp all day long. So I'm literally not lying to you when I say that as like 10 and 11-year-olds, we were getting close to 10 feet of air on our little mountain bikes. You know, my parents, if they would have known, they would have never let it happen. But that's what we did for fun, just for like a whole day. And I don't know if you remember what, have moments like this, but like, after a while, that kind of gets boring. Have you ever had an experience like this where something that was really scary the first couple times, now all of a sudden it's really boring? And so that happened for us. And so you know how it is. You kind of stack bricks underneath the ramp to make it higher and higher and higher. And so we're just going, and people are getting higher and higher and higher. Well, I remember people started kind of dropping out, and they were getting nervous. And so less and less people were going, and it kind of, the distance or the length of time between ramps got longer and longer, and eventually I said, I'm starting to get bored, so I think I'm going to be done. So the translation, 11-year-old translation, I'm terrified, and I don't want to tell my friends how scared I am. And so that's what I said, but as an 11-year-old, some of the most powerful, you know, forces in all of the universe is peer pressure. At least it was for me. And so they said, no, Nick, go one more time. You've got this, you know. And so I put on my helmet. I'm like, fine, I'll do it one more time. What I didn't know, as I had my back turned to go and like walk my bike up the hill, they actually stacked two or three more bricks under the ramp while I wasn't looking. So what I thought I was ramping on, it was actually, I mean, multiple inches higher than even what I expected. And so I, you know, started pedaling as fast as I could, you know, down the hill. I hit the ramp and the handlebars of my bike came up and smacked me in the face, and that's all I remember. That's where I blacked out. And so I was filled in on the rest of the details later, and I was told that my unconscious body flew through the air, did a half flip, and then I landed on my head. So it checks out, because I remember waking up with the bike on top of me, and just I could see the skid of grass where I had like kind of, you know, my face had done the thing through the dirt. And so that is how that went. So the good news is no broken bones. Bad news is 11-year-olds don't know concussion protocol. And so I had like pounding headaches, you know, the rest of the day, and I'm like, it's fine. I just, you know, hit my head a little bit. But that is one of the crazy things, one of the fun things that we did during the summer. And I'm sure if we were to go around the room, all of us would share, you know, incredible stories, memories, and moments that we experienced during the summer, right? They wouldn't all involve, you know, hurling your body off a ramp, but you would have stories, memories that you cherish and retell for years to come. It's likely that if we were to do that, that all of them would have one thing in common, though. Whether your story involves ramping or crazy things you did when you were younger, or wild things that your parents never caught you doing, all of them would probably have one thing in common, that you did it with friends, right? That the friends were right there next to you when it happened. Friends are the ones that you talk to late into the night. They're the people you road trip with. They're the people you play games with, that you watch movies with. They're the ones that ask you how you're doing, and they actually want to know. They're the ones that text you when things are going well. They're the ones that are there when things are not going well. They're the first to show up when life gets terrible. Friendship is one of the most influential things in your life. I once heard somebody say that if you show me your friends, I'll show your future. And that's because the friends that you and I surround ourselves with have a significant impact on the direction you take and the choices that you make in life. Proverbs says it this way. We're going to bounce around to a lot of different proverbs, but it says this: the one who walks with the wise will become wise, but a companion of fools will suffer harm. And throughout the entire book of Proverbs, this theme of friendship shows up over and over, because King Solomon knew that you become like the people you spend the most time with. And so if you and I, we want to live a life of wisdom, one of the most important things that we can do is surround ourselves with good friends. And so whether you're here this morning and you feel blessed with great friendship, or you feel like you long for deeper friendship, all of us were made for friendship. It's a God-given desire that we all have, and it's built into the way that we're made. And so if that's true, then the question we want to answer this morning is this: what are the marks of a good friend? That's the question we want to answer. What are the marks of a good friend? And the book of Proverbs has a lot to say, and so we're going to bounce around. And so I just want to give us four marks of good friendship this morning that will help us be a better friend and help us know what to look for as we look for friends as well. And so the first mark of a good friend is that they're faithful. In other words, they're there for you in the good times and the bad. The unfortunate reality, though, is that actually fair weather, like, friends seem to be really abundant. I don't know if you've ever noticed that before, but look with me at Proverbs 14. Proverbs 14, verse 20. Proverbs 14, verse 20, it says this: the poor person is disliked even by his neighbor, but the rich has many friends. there's a similar idea in Proverbs 19. I'll turn there and I'll read it for us. It says this, Proverbs 19, verse 4, it says, "Wealth brings many new friends, but a poor person is deserted by his friend." So there's this theme in the book of Proverbs that actually fair weather friends are very abundant. So one pastor, Tim Keller, says, "This shows the painful truth that most relationships are transactional." Have you ever experienced that before in your life? Maybe at work you got a promotion and now all of a sudden people are laughing at your jokes and they want to be your friend. Maybe you've had seasons of prosperity in your life where it was really easy to make friends, or maybe you've experienced kind of the dark side of this reality where you were going through a really painful and hard time in your life. And actually the moment when you needed friends the most was the time when it was the hardest to make friends. Maybe you've experienced that side of things. And the reason this happens is because most relationships are not built on true friendship. Most people in life aren't true friends. One pastor said that this means when you shatter, they scatter. But Proverbs 18:24, this is a really classic verse on friendship, especially from the book of Proverbs. Proverbs 18:24, it says this, "A man of many companions may come to ruin." In other words, even a person with many friends will have dark days in their life. Even a person with many friends will have seasons of suffering. Even a person with many friends will walk through the valley. But look at what it says as you keep reading. It says this, "A man of many companions will come to ruin, but there is a friend," and notice it's singular, meaning this kind of a friend is really hard to come across. There is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. There's a friend who sticks closer than a brother, and that's one of the ways that you know a true friend. A true friend is going to stick around when your entire world falls apart. When everyone else is scattering, they're still around. They don't leave when you're in trouble. They stick around. In many ways, that's one of the ways that you can tell if a friend is legit or not, time and trouble, because a good friend is somebody that's going to stick around when things are hard, that they don't run at the first sign of trouble. They're in it for the long haul. A companion says, "Call me if you need anything," but a friend is just there. And there's a handful of examples of this from my own life that I remember, but there's a couple specifically that Rachel and I, that's my wife, that we love really dearly. So fun fact that when we were married March 28th, this is a good test, March 28th, 2020. So if you remember, that was literally the week after the entire world shut down to a global pandemic, right? So that we got married at the right time. But during that time, that changed a lot of things with our wedding plans, right? We were planning to have a wedding of, you know, close to 300 people and ended up having 10, which makes it easier to remember who's at your wedding, for the record. That's a lot easier to remember that. But we had 10 people. And so with that, there comes a lot of like grieving. You're grieving experiences that you won't have quite the same way. You're grieving people that wouldn't be able to enjoy your wedding. You're grieving a handful of things. But I remember this specific couple that they walked with us through that moment. They laughed with us and expressed joy over a day that was really, really beautiful. It wasn't what we expected, but it was still really beautiful. And they laughed and expressed joy with us through that. But they also cried over things that didn't work out the way that we hoped. And I remember 3 months later when we, like so many other people, were quarantined for 14 days. In our apartment, they bought us groceries without even asking, and they just left them at the front door. We like opened the door like, "Wow, it's like a lot of salsa, thank you," you know? And wow. And so they did that. And then again, this summer, they walked us through a difficult and tragic season. We had a hard summer this year, Rachel and I, and they bought us groceries, they brought us coffee, they slept, let us sleep on their bed, they bought crumble cookies for us. I don't know if you've ever had crumble cookies before, but it was like, it just brings joy to basically any moment. And they didn't say much during that time. They just kind of were there. They didn't have to say anything, though, because we knew that they wanted to be there. We knew that they were faithful friends because they'd shown themselves to be faithful over and over and over again. We knew they weren't going anywhere because we have hundreds of other examples when they stuck around. They've been there and seen us at our best. They've seen us at our worst. And throughout all of it, they've remain faithful. And so not only is a good friend faithful, though, but a good friend is honest. So that's the second mark of a good friend. So the first mark of a good friend is they're faithful. The second mark is that they're honest. They're willing to say the hard thing because they know it's for your good. So Proverbs 27, 5 through 6, it says this. Better is an open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but profuse are the kisses of an enemy. So an open, direct, and even severe correction is more beneficial in your life than love that never expresses itself. Do you see that? It says better an open rebuke. In other words, if someone loves you but never tells you, it has no impact on your life. But when a friend is willing to correct you, it creates this opportunity for you to grow and to change. Tim Keller, he says this, that there's this irony in Proverbs 27:5, there's a such thing as friendly wounds and wounding kisses. You see kind of the play that's going on there? One translation says, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. In other words, if someone only ever tells you what you want to hear, it's possible that they aren't a good friend. Because a good friend is going to tell you not just what you want to hear, but actually what you need to hear as well. A few weeks ago, I started going to the chiropractor. So kind of a bit of a long story. Initially, Rachel, she pointed out that one of my shoulders is higher than the other. So now you're going to be looking at that for the rest of the sermon and be like, I don't know. But one of my shoulders is higher than the other. Long story short, I had a collarbone injury when I was 12 years old. It was not the same thing as the ramping situation, different situation. We had a lot of fun growing up. But it healed wrong, and so now, like, my body does weird things, and so I was going to get it checked out at a chiropractor. But when I got there, basically what he told me was, hey, you have a lot of really tight muscles under your shoulder blade, up through your neck, and basically we're going to have to massage those muscles to get them looser so that we can actually work on your back and kind of adjust things to be in place. Now, I don't know what you think of when you hear massage, but I was pretty excited. I was like, whoa, we're starting Friday off right. We're going to get a massage. This is going to be great. And then he says this to me. He says, hey, there's a good kind of pain and there's a bad kind of pain. And I was like, I don't think you and I have the same idea of what a massage is. And I don't know if I should be excited for this. And so he starts grabbing up underneath my shoulder blade, like, and just massaging muscles I didn't even know existed back there. And I mean, tears are coming out of my eyes. He's like, are you good? I'm like, you know, just trying to keep it together. But why did he do that? Because it was for my good, right? He did what I needed in order to be healthy, to correct my, you know, off-centered shoulder. But if I would have gone in and be like, hey, I think my shoulder's higher than the other, and he's like, no, actually, it's this genetic thing that shows that you're a sign of royalty, which I don't know if, like, I don't know what you'd say about a messed up shoulder, but if he just, like, gives me something, feeds me a line, and he's like, you're good, get out of here, he wouldn't be a good chiropractor, right? Even though he's saying the thing that's easy to hear, he's not telling me what I need to hear. And the same is true for a friend. If they only ever tell you what you want to hear, or if you're the kind of person who only tells people what they want to hear, there's a chance that you're not really being a good friend. A good friend shares not only what that person wants to hear, but also what they need to hear. And what's incredible is that this actually leads to deeper friendship. That's what we see in Proverbs 28:23. You don't have to turn there. I'll just read this one, but it says this: one who rebukes a person will later find more favor than one who flatters with his tongue. A chapter before, Proverbs 27:17, it says, iron sharpens iron, and one person sharpens another. That's what good friendship looks like. It looks like a willingness to say something hard in order to sharpen the other person. That doesn't mean you have to be rude. It doesn't mean that you have to be obnoxious. It just simply means that you're willing to be candid with the person. In other words, we're candid, but we're also kind. That we're real, but we're also relational. And a good friend will risk being rejected for the sake of your good. So a good friend is faithful. A good friend is honest. The third mark of a good friend is that they're trustworthy. Now, I know that that technically is kind of like a synonym, you know, where trustworthy, honest, they're kind of technically the same thing. This isn't deja vu. What I mean by trustworthy is this, that a good friend is someone who can keep like your confidence. You're going to tell them something and they're going to keep that close to them. They're not going to go around gossiping with all of your dirt as you share. So you need somebody in life that you can share your heart with them, and you know that they're not sharing it with somebody else, right? Proverbs 16:28, it says this. Proverbs 16:28. If I can get there. It says, a dishonest man spreads strife, and a whisperer separates close friends. A dishonest man spreads strife, and a whisperer separates close friends. Proverbs 17:9, just a couple pages over, maybe just one for you. It says, whoever covers an offense seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates close friends. He who repeats a matter separates close friends. The reality is that you need somebody in your life who you can share your heart with unfiltered and know that they aren't sharing it with somebody else. Because here's the thing, not all of the things that you're thinking and feeling are things you actually believe, right? You don't always believe the first thing you think. Just because it comes to your mind doesn't mean it's like, this is what I really truly believe. And you need somebody in your life where you can go to them and say, hey, here's what I'm thinking. Can you help me sort through this? Or maybe here's what I'm thinking. Can you just listen and not try to fix it? You need a friend who's trustworthy. Here's one way that I like to think about it. If your heart is a house, there needs to be somebody where all the lights are turned on. You have to have somebody in your life where all the lights are turned on. So a way that we like to say this at Salt Company is that you don't have to confess everything to everyone, but you should have somebody in your life you confess something to someone, right? You don't need to confess everything to everybody, but you should confess something to someone, or you should really have somebody who you can confess everything with. Doesn't have to be everybody, but you should have somebody. And a good way to know if you can trust a friend is to just start examining the things that you talk about when you're together, right? If they're sharing dirt from all of the people in your life, it's possible that they're probably not being honest with your stuff either. You know, if like you get together and like, you'll never believe what so-and-so did. It's crazy. Just listen to this. Like they did this and can you believe that, right? It's likely that when they get together with that person, they're saying about you like, hey, oh my goodness, you know, such and such. Like, and so that's a good way to kind of gauge, hey, is this person trustworthy? What do we talk about when we're together? And it's a good thing to flip the equation and just think about it for yourself. Like, what do you share? Are you the kind of friend that shares things that you shouldn't? Because really, there's not anything that's going to separate friends faster than gossip, right? Proverbs kind of seems to make that really clear, that the fastest way to separate a good friendship is to gossip. It's toxic to relationships, and it really only leads to disunity. And so be the kind of friend that other people can trust. The fourth and final mark of a good friend is that they're sacrificial. A friend is someone who's willing to sacrifice their comfort, their convenience for your good. I mean, just think about it. To develop a friendship that's built on faithfulness, honesty, and trustworthiness, to have a friendship like that, or to be a friend like that, it takes time. It doesn't just happen overnight. Proverbs 17:17 says this, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for a difficult time. In other words, when a hard time shows up, they're faithful. A good friend is faithful when things are hard, but here's the reality. To be that kind of a friend, it often takes time and is often inconvenient. Because no one plans to walk through the valley. You don't put it on your calendar like, hey, today I'm going to have a life trial. You don't do that. And so if you're going to be the kind of friend for somebody, when things get hard, it will likely mean changing plans last minute, spending money you didn't budget. It could mean going to bed later than you want to talk with somebody in need. But that's what friends do, right? They sacrifice for your good. One of the clearest examples that we see of this is Jesus. No surprise there, right? Who on the same night that he would be betrayed by his close friends, he said this, No one has greater love than this, but to lay down his life for a friend. A good friend sacrifices. They move in when everyone else moves out. A good friend's going to seek your good even when it costs something. A good friend will embrace inconvenience in order to pursue your flourishing. And so let me just challenge you with this. If you and I aren't willing to inconvenience ourselves for someone else's advantage, it's likely that we're not a good friend. That's convicting to me. If you stick around only when things are good, you're not a good friend. If you leave when things get hard, you're not a good friend. Why? Because a good friend is there even when things get hard, even when things are inconvenient. A good friend is willing to sacrifice. So those are the four marks. And I don't know what comes to mind when you hear those two responses, but for me, there's kind of two ways that I can feel when I hear the four marks of a good friend. Number one is longing. Right, I long to be the kind of friend, but even more than that, I want to have those kinds of friends. Friends who will be faithful through the good times and the bad. Friends who are going to be honest with me about my shortcomings. Friends that I can trust with my unfiltered thoughts. Friends that are going to sacrifice time and convenience to help me flourish. We all want to have friendships like that. Right, but I also feel this like kind of crushing weight, because not only do those marks of friendship create longing, but they also expose the fact that I fall short in basically each of those categories at one point or another. Right? I'm not always perfectly faithful, honest, trustworthy, or sacrificial. I often seek my own good. I move away from hard conversations. I often prioritize my own convenience over the flourishing of others. Simply put, I'm not always the friend that I wish that I was. And yet, the beautiful truth of the gospel is that in every way that we fall short, Jesus has been perfect. And so in John chapter 15, again, the night before Jesus' friends would scatter, the night before he would be betrayed, Jesus said to his disciples in John 15, he said this, "No one has greater love than this, to lay down his life for his friend." Then he says, "You are my friends if you do what I command. I do not call you servants anymore because a servant doesn't know what his master is doing. I have called you friends because I have made known to you everything I have heard from my Father." And when Jesus said those words, he reshaped and reframed the story of the Bible through friendship. I mean, just think about it for a moment. What happens when you're betrayed by a friend? Typically, you either betray them back or you just leave, right? That's how we typically respond, but Jesus didn't do that. Instead, he sacrificed for the very ones who were against him. Proverbs says, "Blessed are the wounds of a friend," but Jesus actually received wounds for his friend. He lost friendship with God so that we could have it, and when you know that Jesus has forgiven you and loved you and moved towards you in your brokenness, it actually frees you then to do the same for other people. And so we can look to Jesus, who is a good friend, as a model of friendship, and we can live in the kind of life that says, I want to live like that kind of friend. I want to be that kind of friend because Jesus was that kind of friend for me. And so as we close this morning, I just want to share with you one principle that has been helpful for me to think about when it comes to friendship. The principle is this: be a Jonathan, not a Saul. That's just kind of a simple phrase. Be a Jonathan, not a Saul. It's a phrase that we use a lot. It comes from the Old Testament where David is anointed as king. I don't know if you remember this story, but there are kind of two responses in that story. There was the response of Saul, who's like, "Where's my javelin? I'm going to destroy David." Not the kindest response, right? He gets angry. He feels insecure, and so he tries to take out David. That's one way to respond. But the other response is that of Jonathan. He was the next to be in line for the throne and perhaps the most likely to be upset or angry towards David, but that's not how he responded. Instead, when Jonathan learned of the anointing of David, he did everything he could to help David succeed. He gave him his armor. He protected him from Saul. He was a good friend to David. He embodied good friendship. He was faithful, honest, trustworthy, and sacrificial. Rather than responding in insecurity, he moved towards David and did everything that he could to help him flourish. That's what a good friend looks like. And so this week, maybe you need to think, what would it look like to be a Jonathan to the people around me? Let's make it our goal to be friends who are faithful, who are honest, who are trustworthy and sacrificial. Let's strive to be Jonathans this week. Sound good? Okay, let's pray together. Lord, you're really good to us, and God, we know that the greatest example of friendship is what we see modeled in the life of Christ, that when everybody was running away, when his friends were unfaithful, when his friends betrayed him, he was faithful and he sacrificed, even when it was very, very inconvenient. And so, God, we look to Christ as our model of true friendship. God, I pray for those of us in this room who feel the longing for good friendship. I pray that you would provide that, first and foremost in Christ, but secondly in people around us that can embody the love of Christ. And God, I pray for all of us who feel some level of weight of, man, we don't measure up the way that we want to when it comes to our friendships. I just pray that you would help us to learn what it looks like to be a good friend, that you'd help us to sacrifice when it's inconvenient, to be faithful, trustworthy, and honest to those around us, because we want to model what it looks like to be a good friend to the world around us. Lord, I pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.